I'm Phil C.
And I'm Lynn.
And together,
we're Rome and Oz.
Real interviews.
With real people.
On location.
With a great mix of Aussie music.
As requested by the people we interview.
Follow us on Facebook.
Or check us out. AllAussieRadio.com.au.
Now syndicated too.
Backwater Country, 87.6 FM.
Tuesdays and Fridays.
At 9 PM. All interviews are live.
And on location.
And may vary in audio quality from segment to segment.
So, Phil, what's on the show this week?
Well, Lynn, we're going to start off with Audrey, and she's a cabaret singer from the Don Bank Model Railway in Devonport.
That's correct. And then we're going to head to Hillwood, where you're going to chat to Tony Newport, who's a musician and he's also the author of Gravel and Mud.
And I'm going to finish up with Jeff Diath from Checkweight, and he's going to be telling us all about the 300 Series Land Cruiser.
Wow.
Now, Lynn, before we start, I'd like to play a song by Audrey.
Yep.
And it's a Patsy Cline classic, and it's called
Crazy.
Crazy. So, Lynn, apart from all these wonderful discussions and this fabulous song we're going to start with, we've also got a great selection of music
as requested by the people we interview.
So, Lynn, what do you think?
On with the show.
Crazy for feeling so lonely. I'm crazy. Crazy for feeling so blue. I knew you loved me as long as you wanted. For somebody new, worry. Why do I let myself worry? Wondering what in the world. Thinking that my love could hold you, I'm crazy for trying, and crazy for crying, and I'm crazy for loving you. Crazy for thinking that my love could hold you. And I'm crazy for loving you.
G'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Roaming Oz and we're at Don in Tasmania and I'm chatting with Audrey, and Audrey is from the Don Bank Model Railway. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you very much, Phil. And how are you?
I'm fabulous. We're having a wonderful time in Tasmania and this is a lovely place. Thanks for taking the time to chat with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now, Audrey, tell us a little bit about your railway. I mean, people think of a railway. This is a railway. I mean, this is magnificent, really.
And don't forget to say it's a model, because otherwise people think they can ride on it.
No, no, no.
It's very uncomfortable.
We said model railway,
yeah,
but this
right.
is a model city.
It is, yes.
You've got everything here. You've got a railway station, which is called Duckenford Station,
that's
just a creation
that's
of you.
That's just everything out of my brain, whatever's lurking in there. It's a fanciful world of little people going about their lives, how I envision a nice world would be.
It is. Yeah. And you've even got a couple over there in front of a church getting married.
Yes, they are.
You've thought of everything.
A bit of everything. They've even got the caterers there. The caterers are there serving hot pies and everything. And we've got the town square that I've built around. It's modelled on, as I say, a little bit of Germany and a bit of England.
Okay.
Because I was born in England and my husband's German. So a bit of a mishmash of ideas there. So like you'll see the buildings, the main station there is actually a German station.
Okay.
But I've given it an English name.
You've given it an English name, yes.
Yes.
And you've also got cable cars, which
cable
I guess that comes from Germany. And they
no,
operate?
Actually, that's modelled on an English one.
An English one?
Yep. If which one is it? I think there's one in London called the Dingle. Oh, what's it called? No, I can't even think now. You've caught me now.
That's okay.
I've called it the Dingle Way.
The so Dingle.
It's modelled on the one in London.
Okay, so the cable cars, the Dingle Way, modelled on the one in London. It works.
It works.
It's not just for show.
No, it works. People love that. And I've even got little chickens that jump around at work. That's
magnificent.
Yes.
So they're not just models that sort of sit there. Everything works.
Everything. Well, that's the idea. There's obviously a lot of projects still in the works. The dragon's got to come out and
I was going to ask you about the dragon. You've got a dragon here just for the benefit of the kids.
That's right.
How does that dragon work? is there a button you're going to press and the kids are going to get to wake up the dragon?
Yeah, there'll be a button that I press.
That you press?
It's my railway, so I get to.
Oh, you get to
I get
press
to
the button.
Get to press the button for that one.
Otherwise, the kids would be just mesmerised by the dragon.
Doing it all day. Yeah.
Now, with the village, and it is a big village, there's lots of buildings in this particular village. You built the buildings yourself, is that correct?
It's half of them.
Okay.
The other half are kits, but the ones I've built over the years out of different materials along the way, so a bit of everything.
Okay. Now, how long have you been into trains, you and your husband?
Oh, since we were little. It's
really?
One of those things that's come and gone, but we've had businesses over on the mainland.
Yes.
As I say, we had one in Teesdale, just near Geelong. We had that for a while. That was an outdoor one, the same scale, which is the G gauge, or the 132.
Okay.
So it's a mixture of both. And we've also got a bit of HO to give a little bit of distance. So there's a bit of HO with the buildings in the background. So it's basically 132 scale with a little bit of the G scale, which is the 122 scale.
Because you own the Emerald Lake Model
Railway, which
is the biggest
HO
scale
in the Southern Hemisphere.
Now, how long did you have that one?
5 years. So from 2010 to 2015, we totally renovated it because it was looking a bit sad and dusty and tired. So we totally renovated that, sold that off. Didn't have railways for a couple of years, and then we thought, we do love it, but if we don't get people coming to look at it and go, wow, that's fantastic, you kind of lose the edge.
It's really
nice to see people's faces. That's one of the reasons why we do it, because it's a bit of an ego boost. People walk in and go, ooh, that's good.
It worked on me.
Yeah.
It worked on me, and this is the reason why we're here, because people told us, you know, if you're going to visit Don, you've got to come to this model railway. So we want to get more people to come to this.
Yeah, well, that's why we moved here, because it's so close to the Don River Railway.
Right.
That people can park over there, and we're just across the little walkway bridge, just around the corner. Come in while they're there, come on over here. You can hear the real train.
We can
just
hear
then
the
you
real
heard
train,
the real
yes.
train blowing its whistle. So come on over here too, say hi, grab a coffee because I've got my barista coffees going as well.
That's a great thing.
Have a cup of tea or a cider or something.
And
come on in. So the model railway is indoors and outdoors. The trains go out into the garden, go over a pond. So you can get both visualisations inside and outside.
I was going to ask you that. So how long is the track? Because it starts inside, or we start inside as we come through past your coffee shop.
Yeah.
You're inside, and
then
there's tunnels,
and
the trains disappear.
They go outside. I think my husband, didn't he tell you about 200-something metres?
Yeah.
So I think it's a bit longer than that, because I see him out here sometimes at night sneaking extra tracks in.
Putting a
when
few
I'm
more
not
tracks.
Looking. So I think it's a bit longer than that.
He's trying to get this back to the mainland.
Yeah, I think it's more like a kilometre.
Now, apart from the trains, you've also got vehicles, motor vehicles, Scalectrics that's built into it as well.
Yeah, the Scalectric. Well, they're not quite working yet. That is a project. That'll probably be the last thing
to be done.
To be working on, because that's a lot of thinking involved, because we've got to time the boom gates with the cars stopping, with the trains going through and the boom gates coming down. So there's a little bit of
thought
in that one, so we've got to build up to that one.
Obviously, because you wouldn't want kids pressing buttons and racing cars through the middle of town and crashing into trains, would you?
Yeah, running over my little people. It doesn't look good.
So when it's all finished, like the car side of it, the scale electric side, it'll all be automated.
Yeah.
The gates, the boom gates will open, the trains will stop, the cars will go through.
That's the plan.
It's a plan. It's a fabulous plan. Yeah. Now, how long have you been here in Don doing this?
2 years ago we actually started. We built the table to put the model railway on, but we've only been here 2.5 years. We moved over from the mainland during COVID.
Right.
We thought we'd take the chance. We'd always wanted to come to Tassie and retire here. And COVID just hurried up our plans a little bit. So we thought, no, let's go now. Let's do it.
When you think of it, COVID was probably the perfect time to come, because you would have been here, you would have been pretty much landlocked or housebound, which gave you the opportunity to put all this together.
That's
right. So how long did it take you to put what we see now together?
I would say if you put all the months, because in winter time we didn't really work out, it was too cold to paint and do stuff. So if you put all the months together, about a year.
That's a magnificent feat. I would have thought you've been here for many years, because you've got walls painted with scenery and buildings, and you've even got that little dragon up there.
And real waterfall with real water coming down. Did you see that in the corner there?
I didn't actually see that. I saw the waterfall outside, because listeners, when you go outside, there's a pond out there.
Yeah, no, we've got the waterfall there going into the canal, so we've got a canal going. I was going to put fake water in there, and I said to my husband, can't we have the real thing?
Can't you have the real
thing? Can't we have the real thing going? Absolutely. And he said, yes, so that feeds down the waterfall there, through under the bridges there, through the Harry Potter car. Some people don't notice it, but Harry Potter fans
Harry Potter, yes.
So he's about ready to
About ready to take off. I've just noticed that. The front wheels are up in the air.
Yeah, and then the police have pulled over all those naughty girls in that car there, that fancy car. They're telling them off of doing something naughty. We've got the horses over there, and it goes through the town and it disappears.
It does.
I won't tell you where it goes, because it's a secret. I'd have to kill you.
You'd have to kill me if you told me? Yeah. Will you tell the people who come in, though?
I will tell them.
But there really is a lot going on, like the police car, for example.
And I've got the eye spies here, so for little kids or anybody who can't hone in on little things, you know, can you see the man fishing?
Yes.
How many pigs has the farmer bought? Can you see someone sleeping who should be working? What are the men doing inside the little shed there?
What's that, they're making home brew?
Doing something naughty.
Okay. But look, even the fellow over there, he's welding. And you've got the lights, the welding lights lighting up.
Yeah, there's so many things. You're only limited by your imagination, and money.
and when you come in, you really do have to pay attention, because there's so much going on.
Yeah, I like to have... I mean, I've seen lots of railways in my life, and I've found that there's different theories. Some people just want to run trains and forget about any scenery.
Anything else. Yes.
Oh, that's fine. And then there's some people that just do scenery and nothing's really happening. But to put them both together, that there's actually stories going on, and the trains, this would be boring if there was no trains. I would find it if there wasn't any movement.
Any movement.
And then I'd find it boring if it was just trains. But to get it together at the same time, tries to please everybody.
Well, look, it's everything's going on.
Yeah,
it's almost like this place is
that's what I call
alive.
It, a ticket to life. That's what it is. Little stories going on. So each little scene, there's something. People aren't just plonked. I told my husband off the other day, because he'd gone up here on the board and he'd done something, moved something. And he moved one of my people. And I said, what is that person doing just standing out in the middle of nowhere? Who stands out in the middle of nowhere by themselves?
Council worker.
Oh, yeah. They're usually in a group.
Well, you have to put a stop and go sign on that part.
You can't be just standing there just doing nothing. There has to be some kind of... Everybody's got a story. They're doing something or talking or they're thinking of something. I don't know. There's always something going on. So that's in my head. Look, I always think, make it interesting.
I think it's magnificent. You've obviously got a fantastic imagination to have come up with not just buildings but scenes that work, i.e. the police car pulling over the pretty girls in the sports car and the chap over there welding and the couple getting drunk
over at the Red Dragon pub.
Oh, yes.
They're all getting partied. In fact, somebody's fallen over.
Fallen over, and then you've got their lovers sitting here under the tree, hand in hand, and the bakery. Look, this is an absolute magnificent.
Well, thank you very much for coming.
It is magnificent. And I cannot wait to do a revisit, because I can just imagine people come today and then come and say, oh, I've been there, done that.
Yeah.
Come back 6 months later, they're going to be so much more done to it.
Yeah,
It's just going to continue to grow, isn't it?
I hope so.
Yes. Well, I'm lost for words, because it is fabulous.
Yeah. I would love to see some of your listeners. That would be lovely to see.
The idea of us coming here and they said, if you're going to Don, don't worry about the big railway. Go and see the model railway.
Oh, no, see them both.
See them both.
The big one across the road's a wonderful attraction.
Of course it is.
And they need support. So.
Of course.
We actually built the little model railway over there too. While I was building this, when it was a bit cold over here, I'd go over there and we totally renovated.
Fantastic.
Made a little railway for them over there too. So we're working together.
So you're working together as a team. The big railway and the little railway.
Yeah.
Do they sell coffee over there?
No, they don't. No, I was selling coffees over there, and I said, look, you're going to have to get more volunteers because I can't be two places at once.
No, what they need to do is put a big sign over there and say, coffee and biscuits, go and see Audrey across the road.
That's right.
And if they want to come in and see the railway, how much does it cost?
Well, it's normally $5 for adults and $3 for kids.
Okay.
If you're under five, you get in for free.
Which is fabulous.
But if people say that they've heard you on the radio, I'll look after them.
Okay, fabulous. All right, listeners.
I don't know how I'll do it, but they'll be pleasantly surprised.
Give them a half cup of coffee or something.
I'll give them something.
All right, I know you will, because
I
can see it in your eyes. You're passionate about what you do, and you're doing a wonderful thing.
Thank you very much for the town of Don.
You know, I always finish. Well, you probably don't, but I always finish each segment with a song. Now, do you have a favourite Australian singer or band? Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, Phil, I'm a singer myself.
Really?
Yeah, and my stage name is Gina.
Gina?
Yeah. So
do you have music? Do you have CDs?
I do. I have a CD.
Okay.
Would you be so kind as maybe playing a song that I have on my CD called Have I Told You Lately That I Love You? And I'd like to dedicate that to my husband.
Oh, no, I thought you were going to dedicate that to me.
Oh, well, all right. If you like, it can be for you too.
No, we'll do that. So you've got your own CD. What's the name of the CD?
Especially For You.
Especially For You, and you want to dedicate one to your husband, Dan. That's what's it called again?
Actually, his name's Tom.
Tom?
Yeah, Dan's my lover.
Oh!
But you can dedicate it to him too.
Dan and Tom, you're a lucky lady.
Have I told you lately that I love you?
All right, there you go. Listen, stick around for more of Roman Oz. We're going to be back with more of that straight after Gina Davidson's Have I Told You Lately That I Love You? And it's going out to her husband, Tom.
Yes.
And a lover,
and
Dan.
Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
With laughter, you can make it better.
troubles, that's what you do. There's a love that's divine, and it's yours and it's mine like the sun. At the end of the day, oh, we should give thanks and pray. You can make it better. Ease my troubles, that's what you do. What you do. You fill my life with laughter. You can make it better. Ease my troubles, that's what you do.
G'day listeners, Phil C here. This is Raymond Oz, and we are, where are we, Tony? What's the name of this? This is Hillwood?
This is called Hillwood. It's an old orchard district in the Tama Valley.
I just had to ask Tony. We're with Tony Newport, listeners, and he is the author of Gravel and Mud, an anthology of football in the mountains of Western Tasmania. Now, the book was written by John Carswell, Tony Newport, and Chris Carswell. Now, tell us a little bit about the book. Why did you decide to write a book all about football, Tony?
Okay, so John Carswell is the main driver of this book. Okay. And John came to me, be 10 or 12 years ago, I reckon. Uh-huh. And I'd had a couple of stories printed in the local paper.
Right.
And he ran the idea past me and we talked about it. And over that long period, we published this in 2021.
Right.
We finally got a book together. And the history of football on the west coast of Tasmania echoes the mining history.
Right.
So, and I think that's its appeal. There were plenty of boom and bust towns. There were many, many teams. And a lot of people have come through the west coast. Some very famous people as well who went on to forge careers in the VFL and the Victorian Football League. So, yes, we thought that there was enough interest, at least, to do a book. But the fun part was actually doing it.
Writing
really
the book.
Well, we travelled around. Quite a number of people that we interviewed have now passed on. So, you know, they were at the right time to get them, I guess. And they'd bring out their scrapbooks. It was amazing. They'd have these scrapbooks that they've had in there for 50 or 60 years, and they'd bring them out, and they were immaculate. They'd open them up and have a chat to you, and it was a fabulous time. We really enjoyed it.
How long did it take you to write the book?
Well, I guess we had stories together, and I suppose about 2016, about 5 years out, we had to decide, you know, did we have enough? Did we need to do more? Have we really got a book? And I think that's when it really kicked into gear. And, okay. and a little bit like the conversation you and I have been having, because mm-hmm. this is Tasmania, right. Phil. And so you go and talk to somebody and they say, you need to go and talk to that person and that person. So once we got our skates on, we finished up with some fascinating material.
Yeah.
And I should add here that Chris Castle, the John's brother, he did a lot of the history. So going through all the old Trove records and those sorts of things and digging out, you know, some really interesting stories. Like one of the stories back in the 1890s in Zion, they had a race down the main street for over hurdles for 110 guineas or something. Which is an amazing amount of money in today's currency. Yeah.
Back in that time, that would have been a crown's fortune.
I'm just going to ask a question now. Can you, the title of the book is called Gravel and Mud. How did you come up with that?
Well, it's interesting. Gravel and Mud was a song that I composed and put on my first CD that Vince Brophy produced. And when we were actually looking for a name for a book, that was the obvious title mm-hmm. because the two major towns on the West Coast who, at the peak of both the football and the mining boom, which happened to be, I guess, roughly post-war to the mid-70s, maybe early 80s. Rosebery and Queenstown were fierce rivals and they were the big employers. And Rosebery had a turf oval, which in a rainforest was mud, which it was.
Yes.
And Queenstown had the gravel oval.
Oh, wow.
And, of course, both sides had to adapt. Rosebery had two teams, Queenstown had four. And the Rosebery sides had to adapt to the gravel and the gravel teams had to adapt to the mud.
So what would have been more difficult, do you think, to adapt to? Playing on gravel? Because you imagine falling over in gravel, my goodness. Or slipping and sliding around in the mud.
I think the mud was harder.
The mud was harder?
I really do.
Yeah?
I didn't mind a queenie ground. I mean, once you got over the fact that that's where you were playing and you played there often enough, it wasn't a factor.
Yeah, but falling down, getting tackled by some big front rower and driving your jaw into the gravel, that wouldn't have been tough football, not like today, surely.
Well, you know, kids played on there. They even had a women's team that played on there.
Yeah.
Look, don't get me wrong. It was pretty tough footy. There's no question about that.
Yes.
But it was played in good spirit.
Okay.
And yes, you had permanently scarred knees, but you know, you just got on with it.
You just got on with it.
Yes.
And you'd do it today if you probably could, because you're a little bit older now. I mean, you're still looking very fit, but you couldn't see yourself going out there and playing 80 minutes on gravel.
No, thank you. and in fact, the gravel used to be screenings from the mine, and so it was a little bit coarse.
Okay.
And these days, it's much finer, so I don't think it's as harsh a surface as it used to be.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But I finished up with two poison legs. I had a poison leg from Rosebery and one from Queenstown, and they're quite painful.
A poison
leg.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you got injured and it became infected.
So, and that was quite common.
Okay.
They used to have a tincture called Mercurochrome that they'd just paint over. Their knees, you know, and
I remember that.
And often it would paint the stuff in.
Yeah.
So I had two, and the second one I was on crutches for a couple of weeks and it was very painful.
Yes.
And I vowed and declared that was it. I was never going to have another poison link.
Okay.
So the trainers would come out. They'd see my knees were bleeding and I'd just say, leave them alone and let them touch them.
Yes.
And after the game, I'd come in and I had a little brush with bristles and you go in the shower and you grit your teeth.
And you
scrub your knees till they bled.
Scrub your knees to get all that stuff out of them.
Yeah, that was the easy part.
Wow.
Because then you come out and we had this trainer called George Rubens. And George, I'm sure, was the saddest because he'd be sitting there with his mate Tubby with a bottle of methylated spirits and some cotton wool, and they put the methyl on the cotton wool. Then he'd dab it on your knee, and he'd get down, he'd look up at you,
smiling.
And you think his eyes would just gleam. That's what you did, and so you had 30 seconds of absolute agony, and that was it, and you were good.
So what did you get out of football? Because that sounds awfully uncomfortable. And was it the mateship or what? What was it for you?
Oh, yes, football was mateship. Was a big part of being a young bloke.
Yes.
There wasn't much else either, by the way. But,
okay.
It was generational. So you joined a football club as a 15-year-old, which I did, and you had men there who were your parents' generation, and they took an interest in you and, you know, it was a kind of connection that, well, almost like a rite of passage, I guess.
Okay.
And then you got older and into the team and those sorts of things, yes.
Now, you said your music, you said you wrote a song called Gravel and Mud, yes. And the book's called Gravel and Mud. So yeah. Your music was before the yes. book, yeah. obviously.
Yeah.
Tell us about your music, because I did read somewhere that people said you couldn't sing.
Yes.
Like back in your school days, in the choir and so on and so forth, that you're... No good. You can't sing. Forget it.
Well, it's true.
Yep.
I mean, I think the choir master was, you know, there wasn't a lot of care taken.
Okay.
He just went along the front row with his ear, and if he didn't like you, he just went like, just give you the thumb.
Okay.
But I think we can all sing. Tone deaf is actually a real physical impairment.
Right.
Of which very few people have.
Okay.
And the rest of us can sing to some degree.
Right.
And in fact, our parents' generation did sing.
Yes.
So, you know, I'm talking about people that were brought up in the, you know, born in the 30s, and they'd get around a piano and sing and nobody would yes. care less.
Yes.
But these days, with the reproduction of music and everything else, is. Pretty fierce judges out
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think I had my own hearing problem. I used to muck around with a guitar and could belt out a tune. And in the bedroom thought I was pretty good. But,
right.
You know, but I wasn't really. But when I bought my first harp, it had a pickup in it.
Right.
And so I had to go and buy an amp.
Okay.
So a couple of things happened. Because an auto harp has 37 strings and it covers right. 4 octaves.
Okay.
All right. And whilst it's tedious to tune once it's in tune, it sounds magnificent. And of course, you've got electronic tuners these days. So you're playing something that's seriously in tune and you're getting amplified
sound.
Feedback, yeah. And your voice adjusts. So I became a better singer by playing this instrument with a pickup. And, of course, the added thing was once I started to be a bit serious, I did record some of my songs and listen back and become a pretty fierce critic, you know.
Of your playing or yes. your singing?
Well, both.
On both, yeah.
But mainly my singing.
Yes.
Yes. So, and I'm working with Vince has helped my singing a lot. Yeah. And the more you do it, the better you get.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting to note, though, because I did speak with Vince and Vince did say to me that he had had no formal training.
Yes.
His dad used to sing, and yes. he sort of learned from his dad. And the same with his guitar playing.
Yes.
He didn't do that until he was 26. What age were you when you picked up the harp?
I was, when I first saw Billy Connolly, I would have been in my 40s, I reckon, maybe late 40s. My wife bought one. I couldn't play it. I mean, I mucked around with it and dabbled and went into disrepair. And... it would have been about 14 years ago, so it would be mid-50s.
Wow.
Like my first public performance was 2 weeks before my 60th birthday.
Okay. That's incredible.
Well, you know.
Because most people at that age, they're a master of their craft, whether it yeah. be a guitar or a harp or whatever. But to pick up an instrument, did you find it hard to learn at 40? Or was it pretty? You said you dabbled in the guitar, so could yeah. you play guitar before? Or?
Well, the auto harp is a relatively easy instrument to learn.
Right.
Right. And you can get kids playing tunes fairly quickly. So that's the first thing. I guess the second thing is what you play and how far you push it. And when you really like something, you tend to do it a lot.
Yeah.
So we were in this little room in my shed.
Yep.
because I used to sit upstairs in the top room and drive my wife crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're now out here. You've got your own little music studio out here out the back.
Yes.
And this is where you come to write your music?
Yes.
Are you still writing? You've got two CDs at the moment. So yes. Writing more?
Yes. Well, I've written a song for this particular harp, the Bradshaw harp, which, has come my way by the generous donation of some really fine Tasmanian timber. And I want to repay them. So that's the last song that I've written. But, yes, I still muck around with the odd song.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this harp that you've used, it's a very unique harp, you said.
It's unique in the sense that there are plenty of water harps around and plenty of luthiers, and I dare say there's quite a few made of Australian timbers. But I seriously doubt that there is one made of Tasmanian timber, for all Tasmanian timber.
Okay. Mm. So do you think by being made of all Tasmanian timber, it's not only unique in its timber, but obviously in its sound?
Oh, it's got beautiful sound.
So you couldn't get another auto harp to sound like this one?
I doubt it.
Because of the timbers that were selected to make it?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So, and it has how many strings?
37.
37 strings.
Yes.
I have trouble strumming six. How do you get your hand around 37 strings?
Well, you do. It's not that hard. You strap it to your chest. You get a nice sweep going across. And, yeah, off you go.
Fabulous.
Mm.
And you play with Vince Broby.
Yep.
Brophy. Yep. Yeah. You part of his band, or do you just play together when you're at the? Yes, I saw the photograph on your studio wall. Now, that's a photo of the band, and that's got Vince in it.
Yep.
And yourself. What's the name of the band?
Oh, look, what do we call ourselves now? Something Twins, I can't remember now.
Yes. and the young lady. Who's the young lady?
Oh, right, in there. That's Cora.
Cora, okay.
That's Cora Brown. She's a fabulous singer. She does a lot of singing in Melbourne.
Yes.
Yes. And Felix Maher on the right on the far left there, he's a fine fiddle player. He actually played fiddle on the music to Australia the Movie.
Right. Mm.
Some fine musicians and people there in that bottom photograph, yes.
Fabulous.
Mrs. Murphy's identical twins we are. That's what we call ourselves.
Mrs. Murphy. Oh, goodness me. Have you got anything you'd like to ask?
No.
Tony, Lynn, no?
No.
Nothing at all? Anything you might like to add, Tony? Anything, any? Because you're also a storyteller, they tell me. Is that right or wrong?
Yes, well, most of the songs come from stories. So,
yes.
I'm a great fan of Eric Bogan. I like his style. Eric likes to tell a little bit of a story before he sings a song.
Okay. So is one of your influences or?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yes. Yeah. Chris Christopherson, I love Chris Christopherson. Yep. Do you like him?
Yes, of course.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So, is he still around, is he?
Yes, he is. He's quite old. He's quite old now, yes. But he's
written quite old, but he's still going.
Some wonderful songs, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yes, I guess I like songs that tell a story and you can hear the words.
So do I.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely fantastic. Well, I can't wait to hear your music because I've not heard any of your music and I've never seen an auto harp?
Yes.
That close, and I've never actually heard one.
We'll play a few songs before you go.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Love to. Well, we're going to have to wind this up now.
Okie doke.
Tony. Mm. And I always play a song at the end of it.
Right.
Now, what can we play for you?
Well, you can probably play Gravel and Mud if you like.
Gravel and Mud sounds very appropriate. Now, you wrote this before the book. We've got the book. How can people get hold of your book or your music if they're
interested? There's a website called Gravel and Mud.
Right.
Yep. And
of course,
yes. And I have a website called just Tony Newport.
Tony Newport,
yeah.
Or Gravel and Mud.
Yes,
and that will take him to the book and also to your music.
Yep.
Tony, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
Thanks, Phil.
It's been an absolute pleasure for us, and can't wait to hear the rest of your music. Stick around, listeners. We'll be back with more Roaming Oz straight after Tony Newport's Gravel and Mud.
There's a world of of difference and Molly kind dirt. There's luck and sorrow and a miner's worth. There are fields of play beneath lyle and reed. There's grit and grace in the West Coast creed. There's blood and stitches in the game they love. The earth, the elements, gravel and mud. Gravel and mud, stitches and blood. West Coast spirit and the game they love. How many words do paint the sky? How much is contained in a miner's sigh? There's a world of difference in drizzle and rain. There's winter and darkness in a miner's veins. There are fields of play beneath lyle and reed. There's grit and grace in the West Coast creed. There's blood and stitches in the game they love. The earth, the elements, gravel and mud. Gravel and mud, stitches and blood. West Coast spirit and the game they love. How many words do paint the past? Just how long can a miner's luck last? There's a world of difference in graft and gain. There's regret and riches in a miner's pain. There are fields of play beneath lyle and reed. There's grit and grace in the West Coast creed. There's blood and stitches in the game they love. The earth, the elements, gravel and mud. Gravel and mud, stitches and blood. West Coast spirit in the game they love. How many words to paint the here and now? How much patience in a mining town? There's a world of difference in boom and bust. There's hope and fear, silver and rust. There are fields of play beneath lyle and reed. There's grit and grace in the West Coast creed. There's blood and stitches in the game they love.
G'day listeners, Phil C here, the famous Jeff Diath. You've become famous now, my friend. I hear you've sold another franchise for Checkweight. How's all that going for you before we start our discussion?
Awesome, Phil. Yeah, Jason in Sydney has been kicking a lot of goals and doing a lot of waves down in Sydney. Actually, in December, he did more waves than I did, which is pretty awesome for
Fabulous.
Him. So there's a lot of interest, which is really good, and a lot of people concerned about their weights and want to know.
Yes.
So that's awesome.
Yes.
And then, recently we've had Greg start in Newcastle and Lake Macquarie area.
Okay.
So that's also exciting.
Fabulous. Yeah. Business is booming for Checkweight. I'm so glad that people are becoming really, really conscious because, you know, what we see on the road is sometimes nightmarish. So I'm glad people are starting to seek the right information.
And I think the other thing from my point of view is I'm starting to see more and more people who are actually legal. And, I mean, we check 15 things. They're not all weight, but, you know, there's 15 things that we check.
Right.
And we're getting quite a few now that are actually getting 15 out of 15 or at least, you know, sort of 12 to 15 ticks.
Wow.
So, and that's really gratifying to see that a lot of people are getting it right.
Yes.
Some of these people have been caravanning for a while and upgraded to big vans, but a lot of them are new caravanners as well. So that's really pleasing to see that a lot of people are very conscious of their weights and not overloading.
Fantastic. So what are we going to discuss today?
Well, I thought we might talk about the new Land Cruiser 300, but we're starting to weigh a few now.
Okay.
So I thought I'd just talk about the Land Cruiser 300 as opposed to the 200 series and whether they, Toyota, in their wisdom, fixed the payload issues that I've talked about before in the past.
Well, this is excellent. This is a brand new topic because we've never actually discussed the 300, have we? Not at all. I don't think you'd weighed any at that stage.
No, I think I weighed the first one back in October.
Okay.
And I think I've weighed about three now, and Jason's done two or three in Sydney as well.
Fantastic.
So we're starting now to get a few figures.
Right. So what can you tell us about the Land Cruiser 300 series?
Well, the couple that I've weighed were the GX series. So that's, I suppose, the entry-level Land Cruiser.
Yes.
And I suppose why I make a point of that is that people quite often don't realise that the bottom end of a model, whether it's a Land Cruiser or a Ranger or D-Max or MUX,
yep,
generally has more payload than the top of the line.
Okay.
So if you're comparing, you can't sort of just compare Land Cruisers.
Right.
So a GX has less kit and less fancy stuff and less leather and all that sort of stuff, as opposed to the Sahara, which has more electronics and wind-up windows and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or I think they're all got wind-up windows now, but mm-hmm. Automatic windows, but it's got less stuff.
Okay.
So you actually find that the bottom of the series, or the GX in this case, has a little bit more payload than what you would have in a Sahara.
Okay.
So that's something to bear in mind.
Okay.
I mean, the GX has around 870 mm-hmm. In payload, whereas the older model, the 200, had about 710.
Yes.
And a Sahara only about 610.
Ah, okay.
So you can see you've got about 200 kilos more payload
yes.
than a 200 series Sahara
right.
in a 300 series GX.
Okay.
And, like without, calling us all fat, 200 kilos is two people. So,
yes.
or 280 kilos, that means you've got, two free people, I suppose, in the new 300 series as opposed to Sahara 200 series.
Okay. Well, that's interesting because, a lot of people think, I got a Land Cruiser, I can do anything. But there's actually a difference which probably a lot of people wouldn't be aware of, me included.
That's right.
The difference between a GX and a Sahara. There's a couple of hundred kilos of payload there.
That's right.
Wow.
So, so we've got to probably, but when we're looking at it, the V6, the new 300 series is actually lighter, so it starts off lighter.
Okay.
However, Toyota, in their wisdom, dropped the GVM, the gross vehicle mass limit, by 70 kilos from 3350 to 3280.
Okay.
So potentially there could have been even more payload had they kept the GVM the same.
Right.
I'm sure there's engineering reasons why they didn't keep it the same,
mm-hmm.
But bearing in mind that most people probably get it upgraded, there's probably good reasons why, in my opinion, they could have kept it the same.
Okay.
So in essence, you're probably getting around 100K more payload with a 300 series than you are in a 200 series.
Okay. Okay.
So, potentially one person and a carton of beer.
Okay. Or a small fridge. Yeah, a small fridge and a lot of beer. fridge. Fair enough.
So I'm just going to use the example of one of the vans that I did weigh and sort of give you some actuals in related to that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a standard GX. So it has a GVM of 3280.
Right.
And it weighed in at 3310. So he didn't have much in it. So he was actually 30 kilos over.
Okay.
So all he had in it was two people, a full tank of fuel, and a small drawer and fridge in the back.
Right.
So there wasn't a lot of stuff in it. The tow bore weight was high. It was in the high 300s. Just under 350,
yep.
So 340, and his van, was a 3,300 caravan.
Okay.
So the tow bore was around where it should be. Might have been, a few kilos heavy.
Okay.
So you can see that, without a lot of stuff in it, just a small fridge and a couple of tubs. I don't think it was actually drawers; it was tubs with a few things in the back. He was right on his limit of his GVM.
Jeez. Was he surprised at that?
He'd done his figures.
Yep.
He'd read my blog about why Carillion Cruisers were over. And he thought he would be about 30 or 40 under. And in fact, he was 30 over.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
The other reason the GX is a little bit lighter is it's not a 7 seat. So you don't have those extra 2 seats that you can actually you know, that weigh something and, yep, and are added in, mm-hmm, which a lot of people take out in the 200 series if they're going around Australia anyway.
Mm. Yep, absolutely.
The other thing to note is that the rear axle weight went down by 30 kilos. Sorry, 20 kilos. So it used to be 1950 and they reduced it to 1930. So in this instance, he was 1900 on the rear axle.
Right.
So he was only 30 k's under his maximum rear axle weight.
Okay.
And bear in mind that he had probably no more than about 50 kilos in the back of the vehicle.
Wow.
And a 340 kilo turbo weight. That was a bit disappointing.
Yeah.
You know, when we weighed it, though, we talked to him about moving the weight forward, you know, that he did have in the tubs and, you know, folding the seats down and moving the stuff forward, yep, which would take a little bit of pressure off that rear axle.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, look, it was disappointing. I think we've done one other that was substantially over. When I say substantially, up in the, you know, the 100, 120 kilos over on its GVM and over on its rear axle.
Jeez.
And I've done another one which had nothing in the back, and a nice Jayco caravan, well weighted, and he was about 70 kilos under his GVM.
Okay.
But he had absolutely zero in the back of the Land Cruiser.
Wow.
So, yeah, and I suppose to me, I think it's a, you know, from a towing point of view, I think it's a missed opportunity by Toyota to, if they had have left the GVM, you know, higher at that 3350 and left the rear axle a bit high,
mm-hmm,
I think we would have far less Land Cruiser owners needing GVM upgrades and being over on the roads.
Wow, so, okay. Interesting. And they're not cheap vehicles, as you know. I mean, Toyota are right up there with the price. You'd think you'd have a lot more flexibility to be able to put things in there, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and I suppose it's just a warning. I'm not saying they're not a good tow vehicle. I think, you know, most people who tow with Land Cruisers are pretty happy with, and I'm talking 200 and 300 series,
yeah,
here.
For sure.
You know, they're happy with the power, they're happy with the footprint, they're happy with the stability. And, yeah, unfortunately, you've got a pretty roomy vehicle which you can't put much weight in. So, and just think too, these were stock standard. So there was no bull bars, there's no winches. No roof racks, nothing like that.
Wow.
So if you start putting a bull bar and winches and roof racks on a Land Cruiser, even the 300 series,
yes,
you will be overweight.
Goodness me.
Unless you get a GVM upgrade.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's not always a two-person vehicle, is it? I mean, if you're talking about a seven-seater, you would think, oh, well, it's mum and dad and two or three kids. So there's a couple of kids in the back there. That would have put him in an awkward situation, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you put three kids in the back and then you've got, you know, a fridge in the back of either a 200 or a 300 series and tow it, hook it up to a caravan,
yes,
you're overweight.
Wow. Yeah.
And unfortunately, people, a lot of people don't realise that. You know, they go in and, of course, the sales guys goes, yeah, 3.5 towing, that's fine.
Yes.
But it's the other weight limits that they're not looking at.
Yeah.
And that's your rear axle and your total weight of the vehicle.
Yes.
Of course, it's in the small print, you know, in the owner's manual and in the sales brochure. It's in the fine print that no one ever reads.
The fine print you need a magnifying glass to find. That's how fine the print is.
Yeah.
Wow.
So just be aware. Look, I think it's slightly better from a payload point of view, slightly better than the 200 series.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't really fix the problem.
No.
Which is unfortunate.
Well, it is when you consider the price of the blessed thing. It's, you know, you're paying top dollar for these vehicles. You think you'd be able to do a bit more with them. And I think the people that got them, they're the people who don't realise, you know what I mean? There's a lot of people out there, they think, 200 series, 300 series, I can tow anything with that. And then you see them with five bicycles hanging off the back and three screaming kids in the back. And goodness, you know, imagine what sort of a scenario, yeah, they'd be in. You know what I mean? So
I've seen plenty that are overweight, so I don't have to imagine.
No, I know. Fair enough. Well, that's a bit disappointing for the Toyota people out there. You really have to consider what you're going to be doing with it before you before you go out and lay out so much money to find out that you may not be getting quite, you know, what you were expecting or hoping for.
Yeah, and we might do a in a future podcast, but we'll talk about why payload is king, both in the caravan and the vehicle.
Okay,
fabulous. Why I look at payload instead of towing capacity.
Fabulous idea, my friend. I think we should do that. I definitely think we should do it. Anything else you'd like to say about them, the 300s?
No, but if Toyota want to give me one to analysis and drive around, I'd be happy to accept one.
That'd be lovely. I think if they want to loan me one, I can talk to my friends at 7th Street and get a Dakar or something, and we'll whack that on the back and we'll find out how it's going to perform out on the open highway and whether or not we're going to be overweight before we pull out of the yard. Interesting subject.
No worries.
All right, Jeff. Well, mate, thank you so much.
Thanks, Phil, for having me.
Now, what can we play for you? You know, exactly the same format's got to be Aussie. What can we play for the Land Cruiser 300 series?
You're the voice, aren't you, Phil?
You're the voice by John Farnham, and you're the voice when it comes to weights and measures, my friend. Thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us.
Thanks, Phil. Travel safe and enjoy the road.
There you go, listeners. Jeff Diaz from Check Weight. Stick around. We'll be back with more Roman Oz straight after Johnny Farnham's You're the Voice.
Chance to turn the pages over.
We hope you enjoyed the show, listeners.
If you missed any, check out our Facebook page or allaussieradio.com.au.
Tune in next week for more Roman Oz.